This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over A Godly Christmas. So if you haven't watched it and don't want us to give you all the spoilers, pass on this one and we will see you next time.
Oh, are you ready for one dry kiss?
Woohoo! Yeah!
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies, where we recap one Christmas Hallmark movie throughout November and December. Today we are doing A God Wink Christmas. Winky Winky! And I am here with my Winky Winky co-host, Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with my what's the opposite of winky winky, I love you, but this movie, Corinne Edding.
Oh my gosh, this movie is so special.
Is that what you want to call it? Special? I have other words. I mean, we'll get into it. I'm sure we'll get into it.
It's a ride. This movie is a ride. Do you have a synopsis for us?
I do. Paula, played by Kimberly Sustad, is a 30-something professional appraiser who lives in St. Louis. She's in a committed relationship with Daniel, an up-and-coming attorney, but lately has been feeling unfulfilled. Her love of antiques has been pushed aside by paperwork and reports, and she toys around with the idea of opening her own antique shop. Meanwhile, in Martha's Vineyard, Gary, played by Paul Campbell, is working away at his inn prepping for the holiday season. He is newly divorced but keeps himself busy with community service and a close circle of friends. A whole slew of events keep bringing Paula and Gary together in a god winky winky way, but neither are looking for what the universe keeps putting in front of them, that they should be together.
Forever.
Will Paula wink back at God and ditch her current beau for the innkeeper Gary? Will Gary give the finger guns he deserves to God?
Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
After that oh-so-gracious winky-winky that God gave, will true love prevail? And will they wink back? Find out with us.
We should also give a warning that we will be religiously irreverent throughout this episode. If you are bothered by people maybe doing a little jokey-jokey around God, then you should also just catch us on the next episode.
Yeah, and also I think God has a good sense of humor. He has to, so I don't think he minds if we poke fun. A little fun.
I'm just waiting for him to God winky-winky at me.
Winky-winky. It's not a thing. It's not a thing.
Not a thing. Oh, but it is a thing. I actually have that in my fun facts.
Oh, my sweet baby Jesus. Then let me hear them. Give them to me. Give me all the fun facts.
Okay. Got two different sets of fun facts. First fun fact. Let's talk God wink. Do you have your winking face on? Winky winky. Mm-mm. I love this.
I do not.
I love the expression you have on your face. Tamara almost looks like a marionette. I don't know. It's really quite incredible. Anywho, the author Squire Rushnell.
Wait, what was his name again?
Squire Rushnell.
Okay, worth the ask.
Okay, I know I'm pronouncing the first word right, which is squire, but the second word is spelled R-U-S-H-N-E-L-L.
Okay, he sounds like somebody who would come up with Godwink, actually. All right, that tracks. That tracks.
A.K.A. the Godwink guy. Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns. That's what he is dubbed as well. I did not dub him that. Came up with the term meant to define those things that happen that seem like more than coincidence. He and his wife prayed on it, and the term came to him. Then, in the book he was working on, he replaced the word coincidence with Godwink, and bada bing, bada boom, a new term was born that caught on like wildfire.
Okay.
I can tell that you're really feeling this whole Godwink thing. So now let's get down to the really important matter at hand. Giles Panton. He is in 3 out of 4 of our Christmas movies in the month of November, and he frequently plays the boy who doesn't get or loses the girl in Hallmark movies. In this movie, he impressed me once again with his subtle getting dumped acting ability. He plays Daniel in this movie. But most important of all, he does a lot of voice acting. And for Tamara, he's in a lot of Lego series. And for me... Let's take a moment to bask in the fact that he is a My Little Pony. Yes, I said it.
What?
Uh-huh. I've always wanted to be one, but he has achieved the dream and is Flash Magnus, a Pegasus that wears a knight outfit. Swoon.
I'm going to have to check that out
also,
now.
Also, a super quick final fun fact for Tamara. He and his wife recently got a super cute puppy. He tweeted the other day, "I know my puppy is very fond of me, and I'd like to think that if some evil Bond villain ever captured me and made her choose between me and a piece of cheese, that she would immediately jump to save me. But, well, you haven't seen the way she looks at cheese."
Aw, what a cute puppy. And samesies. I love cheese, too, and I might pick a piece of cheese over some people in my life.
Thanks. I'm feeling really good now.
Did I mention the size of the piece of cheese it would take for me to walk away from saving you?
Wow, thanks. Ain't no cheese big enough to keep me from you.
Ain't no cheddar better than Corinne and my friendship. Don't you think I so?
You're like, but a Gouda Gouda, now that's another matter entirely.
Yeah. I did not say anything about Gouda or a nice Parmesan. I love Giles.
Giles.
I think he's amazing. Is it Giles?
I know.
Fuck. I'm going to call him Giles because I'm goo goo for him. So Giles, I bequeath you Giles. So he's so handsome, and his roles just, you know, like how you just, somebody's personality kind of like knocks him down a couple of pegs. And so when I see him, I'm like, there's Giles, there's Giles. Oh, he's so dreamy that he opens his mouth to be like the smarmy boyfriend. I'm like, ah, damn it. But he does it so good. I completely
agree.
He does.
And I also feel so like good. In this particular role, as in his role in It Was Always You, he plays somebody who is like a good guy and has a good heart, but he is just very not the right guy.
Yeah, for the protagonist. Yeah. Same here.
He totally adores Paula, and it's obvious, but oof.
And as for the Godwink, I just have such a problem with this word, and I know it just, I don't know why it just gets stuck in my craw, but I believe like in the power of prayer, and I know that people believe in the power of prayer, and I think that's a really special something. But this God wink is like, you know, somebody taking it upon themselves to say, oh yeah, you know, God, he's my homie, he winks at me, not like all you other people that like speak to him and want to speak back. He just winks at me, and I'm like, I got you, God. I got you. Like, I just, that casual relationship, I'm special because God winks at me. It just, yeah.
I feel like I've had some moments where I've been like, I think that God was involved in this moment. And it's been a powerful and peaceful experience for me. But the whole term and everything around this particular series, it's just, like, I get it. And I'm surprised you're not more into it because you're so into Chicken Soup for the Soul stuff. And I can't stand that stuff.
I used to be. That was the 90s. I still love a good feel-good story. But yeah, that was like Tamara circa 90s when she had all kinds of shit going in her life. And she's like, I just need something that's going to make me feel good. And it's like fluffy and non-confrontational.
That's what Hallmark movies are for me.
Yeah, I see. Hallmark movies are now my Chicken Soup for the Soul. It works out. I think it's just the casualness of it. It's like, you know, I've had also some very like spiritual experiences, but I'm not running around going, man, God gave me a fist bump the other day. We hella high-fived because me and God are like that.
It should have been called a God fist bump. What was he thinking?
God fist bump and finger guns. I think that's the found the title to the show.
The God wink definitions are flying fast and furious throughout this movie. They vary a little bit. And and I think that you get to start us off.
A little. They vary a little.
with the first one.
Yeah. Okay. I sure do. Yay.
Are you ready to dive in?
Yes. Let's start. So I have a confession, because when I was typing my initial draft of notes, my iPad wanted to spell check Godwink. It didn't recognize it and wanted to keep changing the word into something else. And I was all, same spell check, same. We open with a beautiful heavenly sky. A heavenly voice plays over a text that gives us the definition of Godwink. The event or personal experience, often identified as coincidence, so astonishing that is seen as a sign of divine intervention, especially when perceived as the answer to a prayer. I don't know what it was about that woman's voice, though. She had a very nice voice, and it made me want to buy some QVC jewelry.
Do you think it was Kathy Lee?
Yes. We open the movie with Paula. She's an attractive brunette with a square face and big brown eyes. She's walking down a snowy St. Louis street and passes an empty storefront, and her eyes fill with the possibilities. She snaps a picture of the contact number on the sign and heads to work with a little more pep in her step. Paula's an appraiser at an auction house, and today she has her hands full with the McHenry estate sale. They are cataloging and assessing several high-ticket items. Her coworker calls her over to figure out if the Emily lamp they just received is legit. And I believe in the Hallmark world, Emily is equivalent to our Tiffany lamp. Anywho, she uses her expertise to figure out that the lamp is indeed an Emily. Yay! Good job, Paula. After a hard day's work, Paula goes to her home where it is decked out in Christmas decor, most notably a Christmas carousel that she's looking at nostalgically when her Aunt Jane calls. They shoot the shit, and amidst the pleasant chat, Paula hears a foghorn in the distance. Are you at the harbor? She asks. Does that mean you finished your book? Jane says, yes, come down here to Nantucket so you can read it / celebrate with me. Paula protests, I can't. I'm neck deep, shifting through all this old shit from the McHenry auction. Oh, come on, Jane coaxes. It's almost the holidays, and when was the last time you took some time off? You can bring Daniel, too. You can see Paula's resolve start to crack. Nantucket in winter sounds like a pretty sweet getaway. She heads over to her beau Daniel's office to propose the trip. He's in a board meeting, and the people are filing out as Paula comes in. Hey, she says, are you ready for lunch? He shakes his head. Ugh, you didn't get my message, did you? He needs to cancel because lawyer talk, lawyer talk, lawyer talk. That completely goes over Paula's head. And she says, oh, well, can I at least take you out to coffee? It's downstairs and you don't even have to leave the building and go out into the snow. He gets a dumbfounded look on his face. It's snowing outside? The man has jokes because outside the floor-to-ceiling windows of the conference room, it is a white winter wonderland. Paula chuckles as they walk and pitches the getaway idea. Jane wants us to visit so I can read her book. Ugh, can't she just email it to you? He asks. You're missing the point, she says disappointedly. Me, you, Nantucket, romantic getaway? Huh? Huh? He looks reluctant. I tried to put something else because we've already said winky like 27 times. So I was like, huh? Huh? Elbow, elbow, elbow.
I'm glad you pulled out the thesaurus for that one.
Thank you. It's a really, you know, thesaurus for winky winky is, huh? Synonyms. She knows he's got a huge workload and he's not budging, so she shelves the vacation conversation for later. Downstairs at the coffee shop, Paula tells Daniel about the empty storefront that she found that would be perfect for an antique shop. Is he all supportive and nurturing of her dreams? Nope. He is a naysayer. He thinks she shouldn't open a store. It's hard, and those places usually don't last past the first year. And don't you like your job? She hears all this in stride, but divulges, lately, I just feel like all I do is catalog and review reports. And I feel more like I work in a factory than anything else. Well, Daniel is now swayed. He is 1,000% on board because he wants her to be happy. Kidding. No, he's not. He argues, aren't they about to give you a promotion? But she counters, I'm just going to look at it. Not a big deal. No commitment. just looking. She changes the subject by asking when his parents are coming over for dinner. Oh, he admits, I forgot to tell you. I made a reservation at a restaurant. We would all be way more comfortable, and it would be less stressful just to sit for a meal versus watching us run back and forth cooking all night. She looks disappointed and like she really wished he would have checked with her first when his phone buzzes. Mm-hmm. Can't they survive 10 minutes without you? She complains. He sucks his teeth. Actually, that was me. You set an alarm? She asks incredulously. But he is already up and grabbing his coat. He kisses her on the head and says, pick you up at 7, over his shoulder. Across the country. At Martha's Vineyard, a very different story is unfolding. Gary, a slim, handsome man with kind eyes and short, wavy brown hair, is bundled up in a winter coat decorating the outside of his inn. Dorothy, his co-worker, an older but spry lady with a kind face, admires his handiwork and coaxes him inside with the promise of chestnut and lentil soup. Mm. I don't know how I feel about chestnut and lentil soup, but I sure would like to try it.
Okay, sure. I'll try most things.
By the fireside. I don't think I've ever had any chestnut soup, and I do like lentils, so.
My sister had this whole thing about chestnuts. Every time we would watch Hallmark movies, because chestnuts were frequently involved in Hallmark movies one way or another, and she, because she tried them when she was in New York, and she was like, they're greasy, they're rancid, and they're mealy. And I was like, I think that some of that probably had to do with who you bought it from and the oil that they were using. So, hey, listeners, if you've had chestnuts, please weigh in. I'm very curious.
Ooh, that sounds so not appetizing. Thanks, Bridget, for the glowing endorsement. Now I don't want to try the soup. Now I'm okay with not trying the soup ever. They go in and by the fireside, she invites Gary to her family house for Christmas. Gary politely declines, but Dorothy is adamant. You should not be alone for Christmas, especially after your divorce. He nods, but it's time you should spend with your family, Dorothy, he says politely. No, she corrects. It's time you spend with the people you care about. He is still not convinced, so she offers, well, if you change your mind, you're more than welcome, and she tootles off.
And now I'd like to present an awkward dinner for five. That night, Daniel and Paula are at a fine dining restaurant. Yay! With Daniel's mom, dad, and sister. To the side of the room is a cozy fireplace, and there are a smattering of twinkle lights throughout the restaurant. Paula is in a beautiful red dress with her hair up in a twist, and Daniel is in his suit with a lovely blue tie. Daniel hits the side of his glass with a knife. Ding! To get everyone's attention. Thank you all for joining me on this beautiful wintry night. As you all know, Paula loves to cook, so you may wonder why I had us go to this restaurant. Well, this evening, I want to make sure that I could have Paula's undivided attention. Paula gets a look of polite fear on her face, and Daniel shifts towards Paula and continues, I knew you were the one the first time we met, and now I can't think of anything better than spending the rest of our Christmases together. Daniel gets on bended knee and presents an open ring box to Paula. Staring with heart eyes at her, he says, Paula, will you marry me? Paula is staring at the ring a little bit like it might bite her. She glances up at Daniel and around the table at the rest of the family, who are so excited. She slaps a smile on her face, raises her eyebrows, and takes a breath. Yes! Everyone around the table is thrilled, and they end the evening happily toasting with champagne.
It almost looked when they had that scene that she was kind of like almost shaking her head, like unconsciously, like, no, 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 no. Like, it was very slight, but I was like, she's going to say no. She's going to say no. And then she didn't. And I was like, oh, okay. Misread the room there.
Yeah. As she says later, this wasn't even something they had talked about. So you don't spring an engagement thing on somebody if you haven't talked about it with them first. If you are going to spring it, you do it in private so that you can actually have a discussion about it instead of an audience where you're like, yes, I would love to marry you. Because what are you going to say?
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear you say that, Corinne, because today in front of all of our audience, I wanted to tell you how special you are to me and how I'd love to spend the rest of my life with you. Getting down on one bended knee. Well, you, Corinne Eddy. I'm just kidding. I'm not proposing.
What? I want to wanted to know where my ring was. It better be special. I'm feeling a little betrayed.
Ring
now.
Pop. Here you go.
Okay, but is it blue raspberry? Because if it is, then we're on.
Oh shit! It's grape. Damn it! Duh. I didn't think you'd be one of those picky girls that really cared about what their ring looked like. I thought it was the sentimentality behind it. Dang, Corinne, dang.
Do you not honor our love? Do you know so little about me? I don't know if we can go any further with this.
Hey, man, love comes in all kinds of flavors. Blue raspberry, grape, it doesn't matter. Love is love. Love is love.
After dinner, Daniel and Paula go back to her house. It's decorated with garlands with white twinkle lights bordering the windows, door frames, and fireplace. A Christmas tree sits on one side of the fireplace and a wreath on the other. Both have white twinkle lights as well. As they enter, Paula remarks, "I'm still in shock." Daniel asks, "I hope that's a good thing." Paula assures him, "Yes, it is," and warmly smiles. Daniel looks around the room. "Wow, you're really turning your place into a winter wonderland." Paula responds, "Well, Christmas is coming." She eyes him. "Are you being Scroogey? I thought you were looking forward to all the Christmases we would spend together after we're married." Daniel glances around once again. "I am, but I don't know if there's going to be room for all of this stuff at my place. And I have to say that for a Hallmark movie, it's very sparingly and classily decorated." The most garish thing is there on the kitchen counter, there is a skinny rectangular tray that has some ornament bulbs of different colors in it. Bam! That's like the flare. Paula is puzzled, as am I. "What are you talking about?" He responds, "Well, my place is a lot smaller than yours. I doubt there's going to be room for all this once you move in." Paula raises her eyebrows. "Excuse me? When I move in? Why wouldn't you move here?" Daniel scoffs. "You can't expect me to commute from your place. You live out in the middle of nowhere." Paula scoffs back. "If I move to your place, I'm going to have a heck of a commute. What about me?" Daniel says, "Oh, you're not going to have to worry about that. You don't have to work."
Oh, my God.
Oh, Daniel. Oh, Daniel. Oh, Daniel. I love that look on your face.
You're going to be barefoot and pregnant.
For real. Paula does a double take. "I want to keep working. I love being able to experience all the different stories and histories that come with each antique that I evaluate." He looks at her sobered. "Wait. That's why you want your own shop." Paula gets a bit teary. "Yeah." She takes a breath. "Let's just figure things out one at a time. I'm sure this will all work itself out." Daniel, filled with regrets, apologizes. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. This isn't how I wanted tonight to end. I love you, and I got so excited. I got ahead of myself. There are clearly things we need to work out before we get married. And please, trust me when I say that nothing has been decided, and we will work this out together, okay?" Paula says with a small smile and some relief, "Okay." They wish each other good night, hug sweetly, and Daniel heads home. I give Daniel props on him retracting his statements. Like, I felt he had a very nice response to putting his foot majorly in his mouth.
Oh, for sure. Like, "Oh, of course you're going to move in with me because I'm the man. Who cares if this is your childhood home that's bigger than mine, that you've lived in your whole life and you love?"
You're like, "Don't touch the childhood home. Don't touch the childhood home."
I'm not entirely sure if everything I just said is accurate, but it's accurate in my head.
Yes, I...
Oh, I know. Just wait until our next movie. I have big feels about that one.
You're like Bridget with Duchess from Unleashing Mr. Darcy, except this is like, "She didn't say it was her childhood home, but I know in my heart that it is."
Why else would her carousel be there? Her childhood carousel that her mother gave her is in that home, so it must be her childhood home. Sure, she could have moved it from wherever she lived at before, but that's not how I see it.
Later that night, Paula calls her Aunt Jane. After greeting each other, Paula says, "I want to give you the good news. Daniel asked me to marry him." Aunt Jane says, Congratulations. I'm so happy for you. Paula responds. Yeah, it actually took me by surprise. Aunt Jane is now a bit concerned. Honey, those don't sound like happy tears, Paula says. They aren't. I don't know why I wasn't expecting any of this. We hadn't even talked about marriage. Aunt Jane puts on her glasses as they obviously make her smarter and enable her to think better. You and I are going to figure this out, okay? I've got you. I'm getting you a plane ticket right now. Come out and visit me. We'll have some good talks and hash everything out. And I will be there for you in any way that you need. Paula, relieved, says, oh, okay. And they get off the phone with each other. After they get off the phone, Paula turns and looks at a carousel music box she has on her table. She starts it up and it plays ding, 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 ding. She takes her ring off and places it in a dish next to the carousel and ends her evening filled with melancholy.
Meanwhile, in Martha's Vineyard, Gary's outside his inn welcoming his newest guests when Buddy the cab driver lets him know that the package he was expecting arrived a day early. You hear a little magical twinkle that no one can hear but us, dear listeners, and whatever does that mean?
Oh, you mean...
We all know it means a god wink. Meanwhile, Paula is arriving at the airport to meet her Aunt Jane. Jane has a full weekend of walks and fun things, but first a little bit of bad news. She ushers her niece through the airport while explaining, "My editor needs me to make some last-minute changes so the publisher can release it a little sooner." "Oh," Paula says, a little disappointed. "Don't worry," Jane promises. "I said you're going to have a great weekend, and you still are. I have a ticket for you to fly to Martha's Vineyard." There's the magic twinkle in the background again. What do we call that, Kring?
Godwink twinkle.
A magical twinkle. "I was planning on going with you, but there's no reason why you still shouldn't go. Go have fun. They have the best antique shops there, and while you're gone, I'll get my work done and have dinner waiting for you when you get back." Paula reluctantly agrees. She does love a good antique shop. Mm-hmm. She flies the 14-hour trip to Martha's Vineyard from Nantucket.
And by that she means maybe 5 minutes sneeze and you miss it.
I was wondering if you, because we were talking about this earlier, about the distance between Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard, if you ever got a chance to look up how long the flight actually takes.
I did not. I literally think it's probably about 10 minutes long at the most.
Just, you sit down, fasten your seatbelts, and then you're already up deplaning.
Oh, here we go. 20 minutes.
What the? Why even fly? Jeez.
Oh, I much prefer boat rides.
We're going ferry all the way when we go on our trip from Nantucket to Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, yeah. Our next month's trip that we do, like, all the time is totally going to be with a ferry.
Totally.
She gets to Martha's Vineyard, which is apparently a hop, skip, and jump away via plane. Inside the terminal, she stops to read a poster that's advertising the Cherub Festival. She leans in for a closer look when Gary, who's passing by, notices her and the poster. "It's a good cause," he informs her, "if you're going to be on the island for the holidays." "Oh, I'm not," she says. I'm just here for the afternoon." "Oh, well, all those twinkles must have been for nothing. The end."
Okay, shortest podcast ever. We're done. Well, we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
5 stars for brevity. Or 5 dry kisses for brevity.
5 dry kisses for brevity.
Paula gets a cab and asks to go to Edgerton, where the good antique stores are. When they try and take off, the cab won't start, and coincidentally, it's Gary to the rescue. He comes out and sees the cabbie with his head under the hood and tries to lend a hand. Paula gets out of the car too, leans under the hood, and asks if she should get another ride. She recognizes Gary and waves a little, surprised to see him there, and he answers, "Yeah, you can try to get another cab if you can find one. It's pretty hard to get a ride this time of year." And I'm just like, well, she found one pretty easy the first time because she walked out of the terminal and there one was. I don't know. I think there's some some trickery afoot. But
it's a god wink. It's a god wink.
Okay. I think it's just faulty transmission. That's all. I'm not pessimistic. So the cabbie,
who we find out is named Buddy, nominates Gary to give Paula a lift.
Aww.
There's the Godwink's glitter sparkle noise again.
Godwink twinkle.
Which I have a hard time. There you go. Thank you. And Paula agrees to go in a car with a perfect stranger that nobody knows she's leaving with. No, bad Paula. You never go to the second location with a stranger. He makes sure that she knows there's going to be one stop he has to make before he drops her off, and she agrees. If Paula was a murderino, she would know that that's code for an excuse to take you away from the specified location and into a deserted area where he has already dug a 6-foot Paula-sized hole. Come on, girl. But Paula says fine, and they make small talk on the way about Christmas and a super clean vintage car. It's my grandpa's, Gary shares. He bought it brand new off the sales floor, and fixing it up is my favorite thing to do. You won't mind stopping with me at the youth center, a.k.a. the murder hole. I forgot I wrote that. Fucking Tamara, Gary asks. She agrees, and you are so lucky, Paula, that you got a Gary and not a Kemper or a Bundy. He is going to the youth center. Okay, that's enough about murder talk. He is going to the youth center to drop off the packages, which are mini Christmas trees that the kids are all going to decorate themselves. And he is quite popular with the kids and moms, as many of them stop to talk to him as he carries in the box. Paula, who came in with him, notices another flyer for the Cherub Festival and mentions it. I've seen these all over. And a nearby mom says, yeah, that's because of Gary. He's posted these everywhere. Sorry, I suspected you of evil things, Gary. It seems like you're a pretty good guy after all. He winds up dropping her off at his inn at Paula's request. You sure I can't take you directly to the antique stores? He asks. And she says, no, I can walk. You've already done so much already. She gets out of the car and marvels at how beautiful the exterior of his building is. It's like a Christmas card. There's lights and garland, a driveway flanked with snow. Gary gives her a little history. The Charlotte Inn was built in 1866, and it was originally owned by a whaling captain, but eventually was sold to Charlotte Lent, who lived in it until she couldn't keep it up. So 3 years ago, it was sold and restored to its original beauty. You sure know a lot, Paula observes. Do you work here? Well, he shrugs, I technically own it. She is impressed, as he continues. I like restoring old things. Yeah, she agrees. It's like a way to take care of the things before us and a way to pass them along to whoever will care for them after us. He gives her the bona fide Paul Campbell eyebrow.
I love this Paul Campbell eyebrow talk. He has this look that he gets on his face, and I'm like, oh, Paul Campbell, hi.
The one only Mr. Paul Campbell can give that says, you are exactly right, and if I don't say so myself, kinda hot. She doesn't know Paul Campbell, a.k.a. Gary's brow, like we do, so she misses the sign and says, so which way to the antique store? He gives her walking directions, and as she leaves, here's Dorothy. She comes out to put a pot of poinsettias on the porch and asks, who's your friend, Gary? Introductions are made. Dorothy invites Paula in for soup. She makes the best soup outside of Santa's workshop, if she says so herself. And Paula finally agrees after Dorothy's unshakable argument of, you have to eat sometime, right? Because anybody can say that to me, and I will always agree. Paula says that she'll be in a minute so she can call Daniel to check in. But on the phone, she gets blown off by him because something big happened at the law firm and he has to fly to New York. Yada, yada, yada. Lawyer talk, lawyer talk. And he hangs up before she can ask anything else. She stands there feeling like a distant second to his demanding job and goes inside. On the other hand, when she's there with Gary, she has his undivided attention. They have a great conversation and talk about their childhoods, families, jobs, interests. Finally, Paula has warmed up enough from the soup and the company that she decides to brave the elements and continue her trek to the antique stores. Gary offers to drive her again, but she declines. They say goodbye, possibly for the last time, and have an awkward attempted hug handshake that ends with both of them chuckling and shrugging and going their separate ways.
Paula walks into Edgartown and wanders into the first antique shop she finds. Unlike many antique shops, it isn't packed floor to ceiling with stuff and narrow aisles. Instead, it's bright and airy with a curated selection. Paula talks to the owner of the store, admiring it. It must be so great to have a store like this. The shopkeeper says, "Hi, I'm Susanna. It has its ups and downs, but hey, let me know if you're interested in anything and don't be afraid to haggle. It's a tradition around these parts." Paula responds, "I'm Paula and thanks," and browses around. She's about to leave when she notices a Courier and Ives print in a box of prints by the entrance. She pulls it out of the box of pictures it's resting in. It's an old-timey wintry scene with gents in top hats and women in dresses against a snowscape. Paula says to Susanna, "My work, about 75% of the Courier and Ives prints are knockoffs, but some of them are pretty good. If I were you, I'd get this authenticated. It could be the real deal. I'd need to take it out of the frame, though, to really tell." Susanna is intrigued. Ooh, feel free to take it out of the frame. I'm curious now. Paula is about to excitedly crack open the frame when her phone rings. She apologizes to Susanna and tells her she's got to go, as this is work, but advises her to get the print checked out before putting a price on it, and she leaves to take her call. Gary is sitting at his desk plotting Christmas domination with his winter scene Courier and Ives print placed prominently behind him when Dorothy pops in and breaks his contemplation. "You are lost in thought," she says. Gary says, "Aw, I'm just trying to figure out a way to add a little excitement to the Christmas decor for the festival this weekend." Dorothy briefly acknowledges this and then swiftly brings up the real reason why she came in. "So, you and Paula seem to really hit it off." Gary dismisses her statement. "She's just in town for the day antiquing." Dorothy pish-poshes that. "Life is short. If you have a connection, you should try to strengthen it and connect with her some more." Gary pish-poshes her back and returns to the paperwork on his desk. And Dorothy returns with a smile to the kitchen to concoct her next masterpiece. Just when Gary is finally feeling like he has been left alone with his thoughts, his phone rings, and it's Buddy, the Godwink cab driver. His taxi has broken down once again, and Gary leaves to help him out. "Buddy, is it Godwink or is God telling you you need to go to the mechanic or possibly get a new cab? These are the questions we ask."
Yes, and did you notice a couple of times that, you know, the second or third time, he's like, "This never happens." Lies, Buddy. We've just seen, yes. We're watching this movie too. We've seen you like break down two times before that. It does happen to you. You need better service maintenance, sir. Better service maintenance.
But it's all in the service of bringing Paula and Gary together. The cab is possessed by God.
See, it starts with a wink and it just goes willy-nilly. God's everywhere. I mean, he's everywhere technically, but I mean, just say like God wink, God cab, God breakdown.
Oh, he needs to go to the God garage with his God wink car.
There you go. Yeah.
After Paula is done with her call, she wanders down the street and sees Gary with his head under the God wink cab's hood. He turns his head just in time to catch Paula's gaze, and they wave at each other. The Godwink taxi has once again brought them together. Godwink sparkle.
Oh, I got one. He's got to get anointed with an oil change.
Yes. Next thing we know, Paula and Gary are walking down the street chatting with each other. Paula shares about her hopes and dreams of one day owning her own antique business, and Gary encourages her. They say you can't just jump into owning a business, but that's what I did with mine, and I have absolutely no regrets. You know, it's too bad you're only staying the day. There is so much to see here. The lighthouses, South Beach, and the carousel. Paula perks up. There's a carousel? Suddenly, she hears a trumpeted song floating through the air. Gary says, "Oh yeah, right outside of Tisbury. It's a summertime attraction, so it's not running now, but it is a sight to see. I have seen it. It is actually not a sight to see. It's a good thing they brought in their own carousel for this movie because it's just old and it looks, I mean, when I say old, I mean old, old, like old, 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 like the horses have real hair, but it, you know, it's raggedy from the 1800s hair. I don't know. It's just not cute. Anywho, there's a long pause. And Gary says, Paula? Paula snaps to, sorry, that song. It was my mom's favorite Christmas carol. She trails off. I should get to the airport. Gary offers her a ride, and this time she accepts. Once at the airport, they wish each other goodbye. Gary says, well, this is it, unless Buddy's Godwink cab breaks down in front of the plane. They both chuckle, say that it was nice meeting each other and part ways. After Paula is seated behind the gate, an announcement comes over the loudspeaker. Bong, bong, bong. Attention passengers, all flights are canceled today due to heavy fog in Nantucket. Godwink Sparkle. Paula is not thrilled by this and now has to figure out where she's going to stay. She heads outside and who is waiting for her but Gary! He heard the news on the radio and stuck around to give her a ride. Thanks, Gary. You're a mensch.
It's so funny. When I saw this scene, I still am struggling with my closed captioning on my friendly app. It, when she was sitting there and it's like, there's fog, blah, blah, blah. And she kind of breathed, whispered, fog. I thought she said fuck. And I was like, wait, what? What? And I like had to rewind it three times and turn it way up. So I was like, no, no, we curse. They don't curse. We curse. So she sure didn't say fuck. What the hell did she say? Fuck. Okay. Okay. Gotcha.
Giles Panton in the podcast that I listened to an interview for with him, they asked him what his favorite Hallmark movie was. And he responded with a Hallmark mystery where he plays a murderer.
Oh, now I have to watch that.
Now, of course, along the whole fuck train of thought, all the Hallmark mysteries end up having people dying in them all over the place. And I'm like, I don't mind if you have some people dying in them, but like there are a lot of other things that can be mysterious that aren't dead bodies. Just saying. These small towns can't take all the deaths that are happening in them.
At the beginning of the Hallmark Mysteries episode, blankety blank, Middletown, USA, population 2100 by the end of the episode, blankety blank, Middletown, USA, population 1997 or
something. Seriously. Now, of course, Gary hooked her up with a room at the Charlotte Inn. When Paula calls Aunt Jane to tell her the news, Jane is surprised. You got a room at the Charlotte Inn? That place is booked months in advance. Paula says, oh, yeah. They put me up in the carriage house. Aunt Jane is even more shocked. The carriage house is usually booked a year out. Seems like you have more than luck on your side. Maybe a little God winky winky action, huh?
Oh my God, no.
Tara's just blinking her eyes at me. Paula lets her know that she'll reach out when she's on her way home and they wish each other well and hang up. Paula flops on the bed and then there's a knock on the door. It's Dorothy bringing her toiletries and food information. Dinner is served until 9 and Paula takes her up on the offer. When Paula heads downstairs, she runs into Gary and half the town in the front room of the inn. There's a party going on. He lets her know that the people gather there to take ecstasy before they head out to the rave that is the Christmas tree lighting.
It makes the lights so much better on E.
Yes. It's just so, you know, awkward when you go downstairs and there's all these people with pacifiers in their mouths raving. But, you know, Carriage Inn gotta do what it gotta do. There is actually a gathering going on downstairs before the Christmas tree lighting. It may not be a rave. There may not be ecstasy but involved.
It's very much G-rated. It's a G-rated party. There are children there.
I'll let you make up your mind as to what is the actual truth of the matter. Gary has to run off, but Dorothy comes by and bribes Paula into going to the Christmas tree lighting ceremony with a cookie. I don't need to be bribed for Christmas magic, but if I were to be bribed, it probably wouldn't be with a fucking cookie. Now, Ryan Pavey offering me some cake, even if it is a macaroon? Yes. Yes, please.
And again, we are hearkening back to a couple of episodes ago of Unleashing Mr. Darcy, because we love me some Ryan Pavey, or we love Ryan Pavey.
Yes, we love we some Ryan Pavey.
Shall we tell people what happened this last weekend? This last weekend, I went to the Casa de Corinne to visit my bestie in Oakland, and she was kind enough to give me her old car, because mine's getting a little long in the tooth. And so I picked it up, and it is a very cute, very nice Honda Fit. I asked her if she had a name for it, and she said, no. And I said, oh, well, we got a name, he, she, they. We weren't sure what it was. And then I'm like, you know what? My car looks like a he, and I think I'm going to name him Pavey. After Ryan Pavey. And what did you say, Corinne?
It is perfect. It's cute because it's pavement and Pavey. And, yeah, it was kind of like a circle of life situation, because I got my sister's car, and which is newer than my car, but my car is still really new. And so I passed on the circle of cars to Tamara so that she could have my practically new, except very dirty car. But I figured that she was capable of cleaning it.
Oh, it's okay. Pavey likes being dirty. Pavey likes being dirty a lot.
You just live the God winky winky life. So I get it.
Ugh, stop it. You stop it. You stop saying that. Stop it. Stop it.
Finger guns, finger guns, finger guns.
I used to always like your winky winky, but when you put God in front of it, it's just like, no, that's not right. God winky winky. Anyways. Back to our story. Thanks for taking that little side road with us. Paula road? And Gary are walking along the waterfront, and there are lights everywhere. They stop by a hot cocoa stand, and Paula regales him with some traditions she loved as a kid, like making decorations out of normal stuff, like sticks and pine cones and corn husks. So basically, trash. She used to make ornaments out of trash. She picks up a stick and boop, boop, bop, beep, bends it into a star shape. They pass by Buddy the cabbie and the antique lady, and they are simply floored by her stick origami skills. She gives the star to Buddy, who immediately breaks it in his banana.
That's not trash. Yes. It's organic material.
Okay. Well, then. So sorry. I put that organic material into my recycling and compost bin, so.
Natural organic material.
Got it. Okay. Reel that back. She makes ornaments out of nature organic material.
Natural
organic material.
Yeah, you got it now.
Thank you. She gives the star to Buddy, who immediately breaks it in his banana hands, and everybody laughs and laughs, except for Gary, who gets a glimmer in his eye. That's it, he says. For the Cherub Festival, we can do an old-fashioned Christmas. People can make their decorations from things they find on the island. Not trash. Organic, natural things. And we won't have to fly anything in from the mainland. Everyone loves the idea when the tree lighting is announced. Attention, everybody, the tree light's about to happen.
Yay!
And this, I'm happy to say, is the first normal tree lighting I've seen. Not one where no one looks at the thing, like in the Mistletoe Secret, or where they light the saddest-looking star, like in It's Christmas Eve, or when they light the dang thing on Christmas Eve, like countless other Hallmark movies, instead of weeks in advance so everybody can enjoy it. I digress. This one has a nice tree with great lights, which are all being lit with enough time to admire them before Christmas. I don't have strong feelings about that, as you can tell. After the lights blink on,
All the spectators start singing Silent Night, which catches Paula off guard, but when she realizes she's amidst a caroling flash mob, she looks like she's in holiday heaven. Gary then takes Paula to the youth center again, where she attempts to school him in the art of natural ornament making. They have a nice chat and realize that they went to the same college. Paula asks him how he wound up in Martha's Vineyard all the way from Philly, and he says it's complicated. Tamra translation, I don't want to talk about it. Thank you very much. To change the subject, he asks if he can take her for a cup of cocoa, and she agrees. And didn't they just have some cocoa at the beginning of the tree lighting festival?
One can never have too much cocoa.
Am I wrong? Yes. I'm starting to think that cocoa is the cocaine of Hallmark Town. You can't get enough of it, and you want it every couple of hours.
I like it. Line me up some of that on a mirror. You see what I did there? You see what I did there?
Line it up on a mirror, and I will thusly dump it into a mug of hot water and make cocoa. So they go to get cocoa, and they walk around the boardwalk. And Gary points out all the little things that made him fall in love with Martha's Vineyard. And Paula understands. She says, you love this place because it makes you feel like you found a piece of your puzzle. He nods and says a little sadly, I wish you were staying here for the festival. She agrees and adds softly, maybe next year, as they walk under the freshly lit tree and back to the inn.
Aww.
The next morning, Gary's outside the inn chopping wood. Dorothy comes out with two piping hot mugs of coffee and offers him one. I'm pausing because you have to say that thing about the stump.
Tree stumps just don't grow on trees, you know.
You told me that because he, like, fucking bashed the bejeebas out of... He was Paul Campbell chopping wood, got that axe so high in the freaking air. When he brought it down, he not only split the wood in half, but he also split the tree trunk that he was cutting the wood on in half and tried to play it off so very well. And then Corinne pointed it out to me and said, did you see that? Did you see he split that tree trunk completely in half? It's not like tree stumps grow on trees or anything. I just thought that was the most delicious thing you said.
I like your retelling of it. I think it was epic and it was very well done.
Oh, thank you. So Gary's chopping wood until he mangles the tree stump, and tree stumps just don't grow on trees. Dorothy comes out with two piping hot mugs of coffee and offers him one. You know, she says, the fog is lifted. He nods, and she adds, and the flights aren't grounded anymore. He looks at her and waits with a, what the fuck's your point, Dorothy? And she finally divulges, but she's still here.
Ooh.
She hasn't left. In fact, she asked me to call her a cab this morning. What? Where to? He asks. And next, we see him pulling up to the town's carousel. It stands still, with Paula as the lone rider on a frozen horse in the middle of the snowy morning. He approaches her with a cup of coffee in hand. I should have told you it was closed. Or maybe it's not coffee. Maybe it's some of that cocaine cocoa. Who knows? It's okay, she says. I was just curious and had to come see it. The carousel, that is. It should be open, he proclaims. Christmas is the perfect time for a carousel. As they stand there, Paula talks about her own Christmas festival that she used to attend when she was growing up. It was really similar to the vineyards. Decorations, a huge tree. But my favorite part, she shares, was the big Christmas carousel. My mom and I would ride it every year. We pick out our two favorite horses. We always called them Dancer and Prancer and pretend they were reindeer. Aww. It was silly and wonderful. What about now? Gary asks. Oh, Paula says sadly, my mom died 2 years ago, and I haven't been to a carousel since today. I don't know why I'm telling you all this. I hardly know you. He just nods sympathetically and says, thank you. And they reopened the airport. You have a flight to catch. She agrees, shakes off some of the residue from that personal conversation they just had, and fishes out her phone. She taps a few times. Ugh. No reception. Ah, she sighs. I can't check my flight. Well, Gary offers, let's go back to the inn. You can totally use my computer in the office. And away they go.
So I realized why they don't have the carousel open during the winter time.
Why?
It's very profound. On the carousel, you got the horses, and the horses are hanging in the air, and they are hanging in the air on a metal pole. What do little kids like to do to metal poles in the wintertime? They lick the metal pole. And then you got a bunch of kids stuck on the carousel with their tongues on the metal poles. It's just awkward. Therefore, winter carousel, bad yeah. idea. Not magical after
Samesies.
All.
I know the feeling. I do like licking a pole or two myself.
Oh, really? Are they long, hard, thick?
Corinne, take it
I
back.
Thought maybe
take it, all
it was
back.
Because too late. It's out there. It's recorded.
Back at the inn, Paula goes to Gary's office to use his computer to check in to her flight. While she's there, she sees the courier and Ives print that he has of old-timey folks slain in the winter.
And when I initially spelled slain, I spelled it S-L-A-Y-I-N-G.
Slain!
All day long.
Suddenly, the brain hamster in her head runs up to the cork board, securing red strings from point A to point D. A light bulb goes off over her head, and before she leaves, she goes back to the antique store. Paula asks to see the courier and Ives print. Susanna has taken it out of the frame and hands it to her. After Paula assesses it, she lets Susanna know that not only is the print the real deal, but also that she wants to buy it. Susanna gives her a fabulous discount. Paula asks if she delivers, and Susanna does. Paula asks her to deliver it the next day. To where? Who knows? Shh. Secrets.
I had to look up the Courier and Ives print because I'm like, well, if it's authentic, I wonder how much she paid for that. And I'm like, prices like varied wildly, but it looked like for a legitimate print. It's like anywhere between $950 to $4,000.
Oh, shit.
So I was like, Jesus Christ, lady.
What'd we do for love?
I shouldn't say Jesus Christ during the Godwink episode. Oh, Jesus. I knew you back when you were just a Godwink in your father's eye.
Oh, my gosh. Jesus is like the human manifestation of Godwink. Love it. It's true. Also, while Paula is there, Susanna drops that she is trying to sell her shop. Perhaps there are more points for Paula's brain hamster to connect with Red String. Is this a Godwink?
Godwink sparkle.
Paula returns to the inn.
And Gary takes her to the airport. Before she leaves, they hug each other tightly and fiercely, holding for a moment and then a moment longer, before they break apart. They look at each other with tears in their eyes and part ways.
Back in Nantucket, Paula is chatting with Aunt Jane at Jane's house. Paula nostalgically regales Aunt Jane about her time with Gary, leaving off on, "He wanted me to stay." Aunt Jane looks at her. "Did you want to stay?" Paula doesn't hesitate. "Yeah." Then after a pause, recants. "No, I don't know. I didn't tell him that I'm engaged." Aunt Jane looks over at Paula's hand. "Well, you're not wearing your ring. Are you still engaged?" Paula, feeling like she's at a huge emotional crossroads, pauses and then forges ahead. "I love Daniel. He asked me to marry him and I said yes. So yeah, I'm still engaged." But she can't help tearing up. Aunt Jane and Paula decide to go for a walk, and Jane talks about the leap of faith that she made with Uncle Mike when he got a job in Nantucket. She misses him, and Tamara informs me that she misses Uncle Mike because he died, not because he left to get cigarettes or went on a long trip. I really appreciate her clarifying that for me.
Dieted.
After talking about the risk she took to be with Uncle Mike, then she drops the wisdom that is pivotal to this entire movie. As they walk along the boardwalk next to the water, Aunt Jane says, "You know, sometimes when opportunities like that happen, it's important to see things in a different light. Sometimes God doesn't speak to us in a voice we can hear. Sometimes God winks." Godwink Sparkle. Your mom and I knew that when things happened to us...
I hate that even more than the initial definition.
It's like they just suddenly turned God into, like, smarmy Uncle Fred. I mean, like, hey. Your mom and I knew that when things happened to us that we didn't understand, it was God's way of getting our attention and guiding us onto the right path. A better one. Paula is dubious. So... you think everything that happened this weekend is God winking at me? Aunt Jane said, did you see God in a leisure suit? If yes, then absolutely, he was winking at you. Aunt Jane looks at her earnestly. How many things had to happen in just the right ways at just the right times for you and Gary to get to know each other? It's kind of miraculous. Paula is at a loss. What am I supposed to do? Call off the engagement? Aunt Jane says, I don't know. You're the only one who does. But the one thing I do know is that you'll be served a lot better by listening to your heart than your head. Then suddenly music swells and she starts singing and spinning slowly and grandly with her arms outstretched. Listen to your heart. Can't you listen to it calling for you? Listen to your heart. There's nothing else you can do.
That does not happen.
I don't know where you're going. And I don't know why, but listen to your heart before you tell him goodbye. Thanks, Roxette and Aunt Jane, for your wisdom.
I am so trying to picture Kathy Lee Gifford actually doing that.
I think she can. She used to do the, can you just see me now on a fun ship cruise? Da, 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 da. She would sing that little song with the carnival cruise or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yes, she did. Yes, she did.
So I'm sure she can sing some Roxette. Later that day, Aunt Jane is getting tasty tea and scones set up for her and Paula when the doorbell rings. And we'll find out who it is after the break. And we're back from the break. When we were last with Aunt Jane and Paula, they were about to have some tasty scones and tea, but the doorbell rang. Paula answers it, and surprise, it's Daniel. He had a meeting tomorrow in New York, so he thought he'd come out to the East Coast early to surprise her. They hug, and Aunt Jane greets him warmly. They're all chatting amiably around the table with tea and scones. Daniel is cozied up to Paula with his arm around her when his phone buzzes. It's work! Surprise! What a shocker!
Oh, wow. That is so surprising. I would have never seen that coming in 100 years.
And what you didn't see is that she just blinked at me blankly for a few moments before she said that. Uh-huh. You say so much with your blinks. He kisses her on the temple and runs off to take the call. Aunt Jane leaves the table to get ready for church, and Paula is left all by herself with her thoughts. And I want to know what Tam's thoughts are on kissing on the temple. Romantical? Sweet? She's shaking her head, gentle
listeners.
No,
you know my feelings. Why are we roping into this? No. No kissing on the head. No forehead. No top of the head. No. No eyebrow. There should be no kissing on top of anybody's head unless you're trying to floss your teeth with their hair. Why would you do it?
I love your very strong feelings on forehead, temple head, top of head kisses. It's amazing.
Because they try to make it like it's romantic, and it's not. I mean, it's sweet sometimes, but when that's all the action that you're getting, it's just upsetting and it makes me sad.
Oh, that's true. If that's all the action that I was getting in my relationship, I would feel like I was being infantilized. Now, if I was having a well-rounded relationship with well-rounded action, then I'd just be like, oh, that's kind of nice. Ugh.
Yeah, but if all you're getting is a peck on the forehead, you're probably like going to grab him and like shove his head harder against your forehead and be like, longer, harder, deeper. And imagine how strange that would look.
Not a cute look.
Desperate doesn't look good on anyone. Mm-mm. But oh, do we feel it sometimes.
Or anyone's forehead.
Back at Martha's Vineyard, Gary and Buddy are busy executing Paula's homemade decoration ideas. This year's festival is going to be a smash hit. In Nantucket, Aunt Jane returns from church and Daniel is still outside talking on his phone, which means he must have been out there for a good 2 hours at minimum, while Paula is waiting on the couch for Daniel. Paula is a bit nostalgic. I remember when he used to do spur-of-the-moment sweet things for me all the time. Now they rarely happen. His impromptu visit reminded me of how much I miss that stuff. Aunt Jane says, "You know what you two need? A romantic evening out. There are beautiful festive things going on in town tonight. Y'all should go." Paula agrees and says she'll mention it to Daniel when he ultimately comes in.
Back at the inn, Gary's trying his hand at graphic design, making the poster for the Cherub Festival. Didn't he already hang up all those posters, ? And yet here he is making another one.
Did they say that there aren't
no matter
natural organic crafts that they're going to be doing on that one?
I don't think so. I did not see it. So maybe you are right, but maybe the words were invisible. No matter, Dorothy comes in with a package, but he's confused as he takes it. "I didn't order anything," he protests, but Dorothy assures him. "Susanna dropped it off for you." He slowly unwraps the brown paper wrapping to uncover the Currier and Ives print from the antique store. "It's part of the same series," he says in awe as he holds it close to the print he has already behind his desk. "This was the most popular one they did, but I've never seen a genuine print." "Who's it from?" Dorothy asks, and Paul doesn't know, but he will find out. Oh, yes. If it's the last thing he does, he will find out. Later that evening, Paula and Daniel are doing the Nantucket Walk. They're on a pier that, incidentally, looks very similar to the pier in Martha's Vineyard and the same one earlier that Aunt Jane kept walking on in Nantucket. It's Hallmark's multi-purpose pier. Daniel apologizes for being on the phone so long, and Paula assures him that it's okay. "I just love this," she says, gesturing to the walk. "You and me just spending time together. I miss it." She stops to take a selfie of them, and he notices that she doesn't have her ring on her finger and points it out. "Is there something wrong with your engagement ring?" he asks. She says, "No, of course not." And then stammers, "But I mean, this all happened so fast. We never talked about it, and it's just going to take me a while to get used to it." He looks taken aback. "Is there something I'm missing here?" he asks carefully. She hesitates. "No. I mean, yes. I mean, I haven't worn my ring this whole time, and you're barely noticing it now." "What does that mean?" he asks. And she admits, I don't know. "Look, I didn't want to do this here. I just wanted us to enjoy our evening." But Daniel's feelings are super hurt. "Aww. I gotta get up in the morning, so I'm just gonna go. You stay and enjoy all of this," he says as he walks off. And she lets him go. And I only have one question. Where the heck's he staying? Is he staying at Aunt Jane's? Does he have a hotel room? Like, how awkward would that be that he goes back to Aunt Jane's, like, all head hanging low without her?
That'd be super awkward.
Be fighting and then go back? Yeah.
I kind of figured that he was staying at Aunt Jane's, obviously in a separate room. But then, again, he does have a meeting the next day in New York. So maybe he was just, like, dropping on by and then gonna, like, take the last ferry out of town. Or a plane.
No, because she says he leaves in the morning.
Maybe he's gonna sneak through a window.
So I'm back to to kiss her on the forehead seductively in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Ooh, talking dirty.
The next day, Aunt Jane comes into the living room to get all the deets about their date last night. Paula's curled up on the couch with a cup of coffee. "Well, you're up early," Jane remarks. "Yeah," Paula says. "Daniel left about an hour ago." Jane asks her quintessential Aunt Jane question, "And how do you feel about that?" And Paula doesn't know. "You've never made a rash decision in your life," Jane reminds her. "But you gotta do what's in your heart." Aww. Paula gets teary because every time she's around Jane, she seems to need a good cry.
What would I do without you? Paula says, while cupping her aunt's hand that's cupping her cheek. I don't know, Jane says a little playfully, and they chuckle. And then she adds, you have a plane to catch now. Go on and get ready so you can get the fuck out of my house.
So Daniel did spend the night there.
Yes.
I'm guessing that Paula was asleep when they came home and he just was like, boop, boop, boop.
I've done that and it's awkward. Like sneaking into somebody's house. Like, I'm the one that's the guest and I'm coming back by myself and I hope nobody wakes up. Shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. Aunt Jane doesn't say get the fuck out of my house. She says a bunch of sweet stuff like how beautiful Paula is and how she looks just like her mom, etc., etc. Meanwhile, Gary has gone to Susanna's antique shop to inquire about the print. He walks in and Susanna beats him to the punch. She greets him and asks, did you receive the package I left Dorothy? That Courier Knives original print is very rare. Yeah, that's why I'm here. He says, I didn't order that. Oh, she remarks, I just thought it was an early birthday present. But from who? He asks. She looks at him pointedly, and he shakes his head slightly. She raises her eyebrow in a wannabe Paul Campbell way. He returns her gaze, still confused, because nobody can do the eyebrow raise like him. She slowly smiles and nods her head, and he finally gets it, and his eyes light up. It was Paula! Which is a relief because Susanna was about 2 seconds away from doing a winky winky and that just wouldn't have worked here. Gary smiles excitedly and races towards the exit, phone in hand. He calls Paula, who's in line to check in on her flight. Have you left yet? He asks urgently. Gary? She asks, confused. Yes, are you still in Nantucket? He repeats. Yeah, but I'm already ready to get on the plane. No. Just stay for a little while. She's adamant that she can't until he says, I can be there in an hour. While she shakes her head. This is crazy, Gary. I know, he agrees, but there's another flight in a couple of hours. She's still confused. What's another couple of hours gonna do? I don't know, he admits, but please. Paula eventually makes her way out of the line and sighs into her phone. Okay, but hurry up. He eventually races into the terminal and finds her. They walk and talk. You asked me a question, he tells her. Yeah, she agrees, about why you moved to Nantucket? Well, he shares, there's something I didn't tell you. When I told you about my grandfather, I left out the part that he raised me, and there was nothing he couldn't do with his hands. Oh, that's why, she interjects, why you're so good with your hands. Yes, he agrees, but even though I got that from him, I wanted to cover my bases. So I went to college, studied finance, got a good job, and eventually got married. Oh, Paula gasps, you were married? He nods. Yeah, but eventually I realized that I missed working with my hands. And one day I saw this Courier Knives print. Paula realizes. The one you had in your office? Gary nods and continues. I figured that may not be so bad, living in a place where everybody takes the time to enjoy the snow on a winter's day. Ah, you bought the inn, she asks, based on the print you saw? That's what it boils down to, he admits. Seeing that print, even though I've never been on that street, made me feel as if I found a piece of myself. And what about your wife, Paula asks. Well, she stuck it out for a few years, but ultimately she left. She wanted to live in the big city, and I knew in my heart that that would never make me happy. Why is that a trope in Hallmark? Big city living? Martha's Vineyard? Ugh! There's not nearly enough traffic and smog, and there's way too many lighthouses and charming cottages. Barf, I gotta go. I don't understand that. Never have, never will. He continues, when I got the print you sent me, I felt like I was right back on that street again. It seemed so right, except this time I pictured you beside me.
Aww.
Paula's eyes fill with, oh, fuck, tears. And she finally admits, I should have told you this from the beginning, but I'm engaged. He shakes his head as if he's trying not to hear what she just said, but finally admits, of course somebody would snatch you up.
I just hope that guy knows how lucky he is. She nods and he puts his hand on her shoulder and wishes her a Merry Christmas. She whispers a sad Merry Christmas back as he rushes out of the terminal, trying not to show how upset he is.
So I almost ruined your intimate moment again. And then I was like, shut up, Corinne. Just wait until the end. Just wait until the end.
What?
When you said, Paula said, you were married? I was like, and Paula wasn't interested then in Gary anymore because she realized he wasn't a virgin. He was tainted.
Worth the interruption, I think. Although it would have been hard to get back into mixed serious mode after I heard that.
I'm always interrupting you in the middle of your like serious ones, and I'm like, and then you're like, you interrupted me, and I'm all shit. So this time I was like, I'm waiting for the end. I'm practicing some restraint. It's not all about me, Corinne. It's not all about me.
Well, it's half about you because you are one half of this podcast.
True. But I can also not be an asshole. So, you know, I'm working on it. Once Paula has returned home, she sits by her carousel music box, looking at a photo of her and her mom, reflecting on what to do. On her way to work, she passes by the business space she was interested in and finds out that she missed her shot. It's being turned into a fro-yo shop. When she gets into work, her coworker lets her know that there's a box of books by her desk to evaluate. When she's at her desk, her aunt calls and lets her know that she always has an open invite, particularly during Christmas. Paula doesn't know what she and Daniel are doing, but she'll let her know when she figures it out. She starts working and cracks open a random book, and lo and behold, it's a book on carousels with a picture of the Nantucket Carousel.
God, wink, twinkle.
Yes. Perfection, right there. Paula feels conflicted. She does love that man. So she goes to visit him at work. We're talking about Daniel, not about Gary. She comes into Daniel's office, and he's happy to see her. Paula says, I promise I won't stay long. I just missed you. I also realized we haven't decided what we're doing for Christmas. Daniel smiles. Yeah, I know. What do you want to do? Paula says, well, Jen doesn't have plans yet. Inviting her over might be nice. Daniel shakes his head, puzzled. Yeah, Jen, she called me this morning. She's actually spending Christmas with a friend in Florida. Paula chuckles. Well, at least the weather will be good. Daniel isn't happy. She's throwing away her future. Paula rebuts. It's her future. Have you thought about what she wants? He says, apparently to sit on a boat in the ocean for several weeks. Paula chastises him. No, she wants you to listen to her. And then it hits her. Her brain hamster has finally finished the corkboard layout with all the connections and the red string and collapses in an exhausted heap on its wheel while Paula distills the information. You used to listen to me. You were the kindest person I ever met. And now you're so wrapped up in your job. You used to care. Daniel says softly, I still care. Paula says, you used to care about the people, but now you care more about your work. That's what you prioritize. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just not what I want. They stare at each other and Daniel is crushed. But also at work, which is awkward. And Paula is fucked because she did not go there intending to break up with him. You're a really good guy, Daniel, she says. And then Daniel's phone rings. He looks over at it, conflicted. Paula apologizes. I'm sorry. Daniel's about to say something, shakes his head sadly, then says to Paula, I've got to take this call, and walks off to the ringing phone on his desk. Paula puts the ring on his desk and somberly walks out the door, and he looks at her go with the saddest puppy dog look on his face. Once Paula is at home, after the longest day ever, she calls Aunt Jane and asks if she can visit for Christmas, letting her know that she broke up with Daniel. As soon as they get off the phone, Aunt Jane gets back on her phone and calls someone with a plan. Shh. Secrets.
Ooh.
When Paula flies into Nantucket, she is greeted by Aunt Jane, who has Paula turn back around because they're hopping onto a plane to Martha's Vineyard. Paula tries to nix the plan. I just want to hide under a blanket, read a book, and drink cider. But Aunt Jane will not take no for an answer. No, 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 no. What you need is to get out there and enjoy life. We're in this together. Come on. And she pulls reluctant Paula towards the plane for Martha's Vineyard. Once they get to Martha's Vineyard, they go antiquing and Paula's mood is picking up. Thank you, Aunt Jane. You're right. This is really hitting the spot. Aunt Jane responds, oh, I'm so glad. Hey, let's go to Tisbury. It's the cutest little town. You're going to love it. And Aunt Jane walks up to the Godwink cab buddy and asks if he can take them to Tisbury. Buddy replies, yes, happy to, and opens the door for them. Buddy and Paula greet each other, having established a relationship at this point. They get into the Godwink cab and drive off. Oh, the Godwink cab. Oof.
Is Buddy the only cab driver on the island?
Yes, I think he is. Or at least he is during the off season. Oof. Back at the Children's Christmas Fair, with the Cherub Festival, apparently. Strange name. The old-timey crafts are a hit, and Gary did it again. But something, or should I say someone, is missing. He looks sadly at a twig star on the tree, thinking of Paula and what could have been. And now we return to the Godwink cab journey. It's dark, it's cold, and suddenly the Godwink cab, not surprisingly, sputters to a stop. I was going to call bullshit on the broad daylight to pitch black. When they left the first town, it was broad daylight. And then when the cab dies, it's pitch black and they're on a very small island. But then I remembered my days of commuting home from work in the winter in San Francisco. It would be daylight. I'd get on BART and travel 10 minutes underground. And then the train would pop up in West Oakland and it would be pitch black. Anywho, Buddy says he can fix the car but needs to make a call. Paula is not having it. She knows he's going to call Gary and is not interested in a reunion. As Buddy pops the hood of the car, Paula runs out of the cab, trying to stop the call. When she fails, she then says to her aunt, I can see town from here. I'm going to walk. Maybe go get some coffee while we wait. Aunt Jane tries to get her to stay, but Paula is insistent and starts trudging down the road towards the lights. Back at the Youth Center Christmas Festival, Gary is making a speech, and they met their fundraising goal. Yay! Dorothy, who is standing happily next to Gary, gets a call. And surprise, surprise, it's Buddy trying to get a hold of Gary. She lets him know that Buddy needs help, and he heads out. Gary pulls up to the carousel, gets out of his car, and walks around looking for someone, but there's no one in sight. But the carousel is on, which isn't typical for this time of year. Paula walks up to the lights she sees, and it's the carousel. Gary glances over, hearing the crunching of feet in the snow. Paula. Paula looks over, surprised. Gary. They stand in front of the carousel, illuminated by its twinkling lights. Gary says, welcome back. Paula says, I was in Buddy's cab and it broke down and I saw the lights and I thought it was town, but it was the carousel. What are you doing here? Gary says, Buddy, and then states, I thought you were spending Christmas in St. Louis. Paula is feeling the feels. I was, or I was supposed to. I thought it was what I wanted, but it turns out that's not what I wanted at all. I think I was missing a piece of my puzzle, too. Gary looks at her and moves forward to kiss her when... Beep, beep! Kisses. Interrupt us. It's the Godwink cab.
Kiss us, hey, interrupt us.
It's fucking running. And it breaks up their kiss. What kind of a Godwink moment is that? I ask you. A Godwink cab would not break up their kiss. Aunt Jane, Dorothy, and Buddy all pile out of the cab. The gig is up. It comes out that they plotted for their final meet-cute. As Aunt Jane says, when God winks at the both of you as many times as he already has, sometimes you just need a nudge. Buddy lets them know that the carousel is operational. Yeah. I can tell you're getting behind this whole playing Cupid God wink action thing.
You would be wrong.
Gentle listener, she said that with her, like, mouth, like, her lips were basically disappeared
in disapproval on her mouth. It's magic.
Disappearing disapproval lips.
But it lets them know the carousel is operational and with a Merry Christmas. As a goodbye. The meddling
this is the climax, Corinne. You're yawning and this is the climax. That shows how great this movie is.
They interrupted the climax. We're going to come back to the climax. There was some erectile dysfunction happening in the middle of that with a horn honk. But he lets them know that the carousel is operational. And with a Merry Christmas as a goodbye, the meddling threesome heads back to the Christmas festival in Buddy's cab, leaving Paula and Gary once again alone. Gary and Paula look at each other with hearts in their eyes. Merry Christmas, Paula. Merry Christmas, Gary. They move closer, tilting their heads towards each other, and with Gary cupping the back of Paula's head softly, they kiss. And it's so sweet. They step onto the carousel, and it starts to rotate as they hold onto a brass pole and kiss some more, as trumpets in the background. Just before the credits roll, we see the real Paula and Gary and the real Charlotte in the end. So, what'd you think of a Godwink Christmas? How many dry kisses would you give this
bad boy? Oh, no. First, I gotta go a little bit more on about the Godwink because I have not said my piece on it. I've gone on a running diatribe through this whole movie and I still have not gotten it all out of my system.
Tell me.
I can't. And okay,
just like Aunt Jane, I'm here for you.
How do you feel about that, Tamara? Well, let me tell you.
How do you feel about that, Tamara?
So the one thing that got me is the beginning of the movie. They said that Godwink is a sign of divine intervention, especially when perceived as the answer to a prayer. And I've said this to you personally, but not on this podcast, that
yes.
I don't think that Paula was praying for something to break her and her fiance up, and I did not see any indication that Gary was praying for somebody to come into his life. Like, he seemed perfectly fine. So they were like each living their own separate lives, like doing their own thing, and yet they try to fit this square peg into the round hole of Godwink by Kathy Lee Gifford's definition about things that just keep happening and it's God winking at you, which is kind of separate from the original definition, which just, I don't like Godwink. And the main point of this movie was that there was Godwinks everywhere, but I feel like they squished it in to fit their narrative of the movie, which I had problems with it. I had problems with the Godwink. I had problems with the way they were using the Godwink.
You were betrayed by the Godwink. Dun, 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 dun.
That being said, I do love Paul Campbell and I do love Kimberly Sustad and I love them together.
Yes.
And there was all kinds of moments that I actually did like. And this wasn't super painful to watch again, except for all the Godwinks. So I'm going to give it, a 3.25 in the dry kiss category. 3 points for the movie and the extra quarter point for Paul and Kimberly and Giles.
They're so good. They elevate this movie to something that it really shouldn't be.
Okay, what do you give it, Corinne?
Oh, I give it 3 dry kisses, absolutely. It is true I have a soft spot for hokey religious movies. This was very kind of quasi-religious. You know, the whole Godwink concept doesn't quite do it for me, but I am into, like, serendipity and that kind of thing, and I just think that God giving a winky-winky is just a little creepy, but...
I love the polyester tracksuit line. That was glorious.
I made that up on the spot. I was divinely inspired.
Loved it.
God winked at me and I was like, oh, I know. Giles was great. Kimberly and Paul were great. The movie itself wasn't great, but was watchable and had some really nice moments in it. The Godwink cab bugged the crap out of me, but whatever, we can't have everything.
I agree. After the second time, if he's like, you want a ride? I'd be like, no, thank you. No. I will find other means. I've seen your track history and I'll take my chances walking the 4.5 miles in the snow.
For real. Do you have anything else you want to say about this scintillating movie?
Nope, I think I have purged it all out of my system now. I'm good.
Fantastic. What are we going over next week?
Is it Christmas Comes Twice?
Yes, it is. With Tamara Mowry Housley
from Sister Sister and Twitches.
Yes, girl's got my name. Even though she pronounces hers Tamara and I pronounce mine Tamara.
Yes. Basically, we're ramping up to the Santa Stakeout. We had a Paul Campbell movie this week. We're having a Tamara movie next week. And then the following week, they are coming together in a Tamara-Paul sandwich with the Santa Stakeout. It's very exciting. And if you have any thoughts about Godwinks, Sister Sister, Twitches, Kimberly and Paul and Giles, because we're all on a first name basis. You know how we roll. Feel free to email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us on the social medias at Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all One Dry Kiss.
One spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time, we'd love to hear your reviews. And if you could give us a rating anywhere you might hear this podcast, we would greatly appreciate it. It helps more people find us, and that's ultimately what we want. God winks for everyone.
God winks for all.
God wink twinkle. And as always, thank you so much for joining us for this episode. We hope to see you next time, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss.
Mwah. Mwah. Good night. Or good night.
See you next time. It is good night for us, but everybody else.
It's totally good night for us. Just on a side wink, side wink, on a side note.
No!